We've got a battle for the soul of South Africa, and there is no doubt that the word apartheid has got to be one of the most misunderstood and distorted. But you know how it is to have great, godly, honorable men who tried to do the will of God as they saw it, slandered, hated, and distorted. The Confederates know how that works. This man, Hendrik Verwoerd, is one of the most hated and despised people in the leftist whole way of describing things, but the leftists hate him because he was an honorable man. H.F. Verwoerd was our prime minister in the 50s and 60s. He led us into independence from Britain. South Africa became an independent republic in 1961. He also waged war against the banks. He tried to close down the South African Reserve Bank and replace it with a national bank that was not owned by the Rothschilds, and he got shot and stabbed and assassinated by the same kind of people who took out FDR at about the same time. Our flag, I see it's on the wall here, very nice to be recognized by it. The South African flag shows our history. You see the Dutch flag here, the red, white, and blue, horizontal. That's the Netherlands flag. But then the Transvaal has put a green vertical panel on the side, and that was for the Transvaal. The orange Free State's got the Dutch flag in its corner, and then the orange for the Orange River, named after the Prince of Orange, Prince William the Silent, the father of Dutch liberties. When we chose a national flag, instead of the red, we made it orange in honor of Prince William of Orange, father of Dutch liberties. And it has the Union Jack representing the British influence, the British colonies. So it's got the British and the Dutch flags. And then this shows the two flags of the Boer Republics, the Farmers' Republics, the Orange Free State and Transvaal, which were waged war against by the British during the Anglo-Boer War. And because we had most of the gold and diamonds in the world then known under the farms of the farmers, and for that reason the Rothschilds got the British to wage a dirty war against us, scorched earth, destroyed 30,000 farms, dynamited the wells, killed all the livestock, and put the women and children in concentration camps and so on. And so we were forced into the Union. The Union Jack represents the Cape and Natal, and then the Orange Free State and Transvaal. Those were the four components that made the Union of South Africa, which today is called the Republic of South Africa. Hendrik Verwoerd was a godly man. His father was a Dutch Reformed missionary in Matabeleland in Rhodesia, where I was brought up. I remember standing for our devotions and the school assemblies in Rhodesia and seeing H.F. Verwoerd up on the honors board. He had won the English Literature Award for the whole country. And he has up there gold on the wooden board of honor. I said, is that the same H.F. Verwoerd that was Prime Minister of South Africa? Yes, indeed. He went to school in the same school I went to, Milton High School in Bulawayo, when his father was a missionary there. These are things people generally wouldn't talk about. Now, Hendrik Verwoerd, much hated because he's called the architect of apartheid, which he wasn't. But Hendrik Verwoerd was a man who would sit in the garden and teach his gardener how to read and write. He sponsored many, many black people to go to school and university. He quadrupled literacy amongst the black people when he was the Minister for Native Affairs in South Africa. He built more houses for black people, which are better houses and still standing, than Mandela, Mbeki, and all the ANC thugs have in the last 24 years. And I've had black people tell me that. They said, we live in a house that was built by Hendrik Verwoerd's people, and it's still standing, and it's still a good house. Whereas the RDP, houses built by the ANC, those houses fell apart within a few months. I mean, they're worthless socialist kind of operations. Now, Theodore Roosevelt said, to anger a conservative, lie to him, but to anger a liberal, tell him the truth. This is Cape Town. This was our parliament back when we became the Union of South Africa back in about 1910. Table Mountain behind, climbed that many times. This is when South Africa was under the British. You can see the British king coming out in 1947. In fact, King George VI, my father actually catered for him at Victoria Falls. My father said, of all the things he did in his life, the most frightening was catering for the royal family at Victoria Falls Hotel when the royal family came in 1947. And they came specifically to thank South Africa for all of its involvement in the Second World War. My father fought all 6 years in the Second World War in the Eighth Army, but when he got to serve the royal family, he said it was more terrifying for him than being bombed by the Africa Corps in North Africa. Notice the British bobby and the British-looking uniforms. In fact, those would be the Irish Guards, South Africa, no? We fought with South Africa, as South Africa fought for the Allies in the Korean War. This is some of the Springbok Legion fighting in Korea. Interesting, we were banned from the Olympics in Korea in Seoul 1984, even though the South African flag flew in a war cemetery. Bit of a cheek. Henrik Verwoerd was such an honorable man. His secretary said that working for him for 12 years, she only once saw him mildly irritated. Never saw him angry, never saw him lose his temper. He never said a bad word in 12 years. A God-fearing man. Nobody who works for me could say that. But Henrik Verwoerd was obviously an extraordinary person to have been so patient, so gracious, and he is so reviled and hated in the world today. Some of his family and real nation, every real nation is a people of a common blood and descended from the same ancestors. A nation means that you are to be born. In fact, when our Lord Jesus gave the Great Commission in Matthew 28, verse 18 to 20, he said, make disciples of every ethne, where we get the word ethnic from. The word in Greek used for nation was ethne. Now, today, people are confused because you've got a place called the United Nations, which is neither United nor Nations. It's the biggest collection of unelected dictators, mass murderers, drug dealers, human traffickers, thugs and criminals. You won't find a more wretched hive of scum and villainy outside of the US Congress. But the UN is one big batch of criminals. And so when people think nation, many people think United Nations, 221 nations in the world. No, those are 221 states. And many people speak of America as a nation. Well, you started out as a nation, but one nation under God, indivisible. Why? Why indivisible? Soviet Union could break up. And people cheered for the freedom it brought to Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, Georgia, and everywhere else. Nevertheless, since when has America been one nation? Not since the war between the states. Now it's an empire, actually. It's funny how the two greatest empires of the 20th century, Russia and America, are on denial that they ever were empires. We know that the French were an empire, the Austrians had an empire, the Germans had an empire, the British had an empire. But the Americans, who've got a phenomenal empire to this day, with troops all over the world, and waging wars that have nothing to do with the United States' interests, but might help some corporations. This is the very essence of what it is to be an empire. Your country has many languages, peoples, and faiths. That is no longer a nation. A nation is a people united by shared faith, language, culture, ethnicity. I mean, it all comes together. So an ethno-linguistic people group of a shared faith. The Hebrews were Hebrews. Even after 400 years in Egypt, they never became Egyptians. Your geographic location of your birth is irrelevant. If you were born on board ship in the middle of the Atlantic, you'd still be the nationality of your parents. And if you're born in the air, for that matter, it's irrelevant. This anchor baby business that an illegal can somehow get citizenship because they geographically got one of their children illegally born within the boundaries of the US is nonsense. Right. Someone who studied at college with me afterwards went to be a professor at Hong Kong. His son and daughter were born in Hong Kong. They applied recently for citizenship in China, and China says, you can't be a Chinese citizen, but we're born here. But you're not Chinese. Chinese have no problem recognizing that. In fact, all the people of Asia have no problem recognizing that. There are many places in Africa where even if you're a white person born in that country, they'll never give you citizenship. You're a white. You can't be a citizen of Malawi and so on and so forth. Now, the black people in South Africa said at the time, Henrik Verwoerd is the best friend Africa ever has had. No white person has ever done as much for the black people as Henrik Verwoerd has. That's what they said in his lifetime. This man was the leader of Transkei, the Khoisan people at that time. And he was hailed in his time as the rainmaker, the man who brings good things. And that he is the greatest blessing of the black people. The 11 tribes of Southwest Africa, what today is Namibia, also turned out in great numbers to hear, worship, and cheer him for the great things he did. Thomas Paine said, "He who dares not offend cannot be honest." If you're not being criticized, you're not doing your job. Our parliament in South Africa, this was where we had both the upper house, our Senate, and our lower house, the House of Assembly. This is what the South African police used to look like at the opening of parliament. Smart. You never saw an overweight South African policeman. You never saw a South African policeman who wasn't polished. Everything that could be shining is shining. They're really well trained and well disciplined. Opening of parliament. You can see declaring of the Republic of South Africa. And this is the boundaries of South Africa. Now you'll notice the British already gave independence to the Sotho within South Africa. That's now called Lesotho. And to the Swazis. And to the Tswanas for Botswana. But now somehow people are claiming there's something about these borders that are inviolable. Well, no, the British Empire made them. Why can't we redraw the map? In fact, while I was growing up, South Africa included Southwest Africa. That was part of our country. We had, in the First World War, taken it from Germany. So it was South African by conquest. League of Nations recognized that too. The United Nations tried to take it away, and South Africa at the right same time said, it's nothing to do with you. You've got no right to tell us what we do with our territory. Nevertheless, we did give it away, sadly, to Marxist revolutionaries. This is the flag I was born under. This is the flag I fought under. This is my flag. I will not fly the new beach towel, dish rag, kiddies crayon competition piece of rubbish that the Marxists came up with. Our Prime Minister's residence, interestingly, built by Cecil Rhodes, no friend of freedom, but nevertheless, he built a good house. Cape Town, Table Mountain, Devil's Peak, Lion's Head, we climb all those mountains regularly. Now, you'd be interested to see this. Do you see this huge area here? Reclaimed land. Literally, the waves of the sea used to wash up over here. And the Dutch had all of Africa, but they still had to reclaim land by putting a few million tons of rock and soil into the Table Bay and extending Cape Town. Isn't it extraordinary? They just couldn't get out of this habit of reclaiming land. As I say, God made the world, but the Dutch made Holland. When you got France on one side, Germany on the other, taking on the ocean seems the easier way. And so all of this is built up now, but you can just see how they built up reclaimed land to get the port deeper and all that sort of thing. And I remember my parents said, when I was born, they put out a new special saying, color photographs developed in just 6 weeks. Because it took that long for a roll of film to go by mail ship to England to get developed there and be brought back. So you could get your color photographs developed in just 6 weeks. Can you imagine? We used to be able to go up and down cable car, where you could literally open door and step out. I mean, there was no real safety protection. Notice all the forests around Signal Hill. We have forests all around the mountains. The ANC has chopped down millions upon millions of forests since they took over. And interesting how the Greens and environmentalists don't seem to care when communists destroy the environment. South Africa, when I was brought up, was a clean, neat, well-built, magnificent place filled with trees. By the way, when the British came to the Cape, they found it was arid and there was virtually no trees. And the road the British built out to Stellenbosch disappeared within the year under sea sand blown across the area. And so they planted millions of trees and suddenly we got far more rainfall. Would you believe it? You plant lots of trees, you get more rainfall. I mean, who wouldn't have guessed? Today, they're deforesting the Cape, and then they complain that we're running out of water. And who would have thought deforestation leads to drought? I mean, you know, who knows? And Cape Town, the mother city. This is Hout Bay, very close to us, been very much built up since. Johannesburg in the past. This is what Johannesburg used to look like. And very clean streets, green. You can see how I remember walking to school in the shade under these jacaranda trees. We had these in Bulawayo as well. And popping the bulbs of these lavender, dropping leaves off of the jacaranda trees. And When the communists took over in Zimbabwe, they immediately started shouting, saying, these trees are remnants of colonialism. We need to chop down the jacaranda trees. And they've chopped down millions of trees, millions and millions. Just in the Cape Peninsula, the ANC had been chopping down millions of trees. And one brave member of parliament stood up and said, clothes are also remnants of colonialism. Mealie meal, which you call corn, glasses, he gave a whole lot of other things, shoes are also remnants of colonialism, and gave a few examples. Well, that is the point. Logic undermines things. This is what our stewardesses, flight stewardesses, used to look like. Today, South African Airways is a disaster area. We've got to bail them out billions of dollars a year. But this is before affirmative action. South African Women's College, South African Army Women's College in George, our school teams. I remember seeing this when I was in hospital, the nurses starting the day kneeling at the table in the middle, praying. Our Navy defending our shores, a tremendous amount of shores that need to be protected. Rhodesia, where I was brought up, the northern neighbor of South Africa, Ian Smith and his wife. You can see the Rhodesian army had a lot of black soldiers who were volunteers. And they describe Ian Smith as a great racist, but he had changed the law to give parity, 50% black, 50% white in parliament, wanting to share power. And, well, as you can see, the parliament is most certainly not whites only. The government became more and more whites only, but that was because of the terrorism where they were killing black town councillors, black mayors, black headmen, black chiefs, and members of parliament, and terrorizing and murdering the blacks when they went to vote. So after a while, because of the war and the terrorism, you had less and less blacks in government, but that wasn't because the whites didn't want them in government, it's because the communist terrorists were terrorizing the blacks not to go into government. And so people around the world have this impression, Rhodesia was a whites-only government that wouldn't allow blacks into government. But that's not true. The communists wouldn't let the blacks go into government. My brother was one of the Rhodesian light infantry soldiers. This is our Zulu scouts marching in Rhodesia. Zulu scouts, many of them were ex-terrorists who got turned. This is quite common. Man going for his call-up, his wife carrying his rifle along, helping him onto the Bedford truck, heading off to the field. And we had the last active cavalry that could fire from the saddle, fire force troops. These were the Rhodesian soldiers. When you call them Rhodesian light infantry, they were light. They would go into battle in shorts and with boots without socks because they went in and out of rivers. My brother would fight in shorts and with boots without socks. He would cut off his shoulders, off the shirts and jackets, so that they fought really stripped down to the basics. Now, why were we fighting and why did we have apartheid? From as long as I remember, I'm now 58 years old. I was born 1960. I remember from the very earliest thought, the concern was always Africa's a violent place and you could get a impi, a group of Zulus or Matabele coming over the hillside wanting to burn everything in sight and kill everyone in sight and so on. And so you always had to be ready. We were brought up in a continent where, take Rhodesia. There were 5 million blacks when I was there and there were 300,000 whites. So 300,000 whites, 5 million blacks. Obviously, we were never taught to mistreat the black people. We were taught to respect them. I mean, they were the majority. We were there to civilize the country, trying to bring law and order to a continent and a country where savagery and violence was normal. Soldiers heading off to the border. This is in Cape Town, and these are the Irish forces. Of course, we had a whole range. Interesting, heading off to the bush. This is when I was heading off the army, going in these in train. That was the beginning. When I got to the South African Army, I didn't sleep in a bed but 3 months of my 2 years in the army. Once you had your bed ready for inspection, with everything squared off, I just roll out my sleeping bag and sleep on the floor. I mean, you wouldn't want to ruin a good bed. To make it to this standard every day was just too much. So I'm one of those people who didn't bother to sleep in my bed that much. And We were an extraordinary. I remember the first words I heard as I got off the truck onto the parade ground in 6th South African Infantry. The sergeant major was shouting out there, "Anglicans, Assemblies of God, Baptists, Brethren." We were lined up all the way around the parade ground. There were 70 different denominational groupings, and there were clerks with the tables, and they were entering in your names to put you on the roll call. Prayer parade every morning was compulsory. Chaplain's period in your companies once a week, Wednesdays, was compulsory. Church service with the denominational affiliation of your choice on Sundays was compulsory. And that's what they were getting us down before anything was done. And we were given Bibles before we were given rifles and so on. That's just part of our inspection. Morning devotions, evening devotions enforced. No books, only the Bible. And once the sergeant major divided everyone out into the different categories, there were four people left in the middle of the parade ground. And the sergeant major bellowed, "Well, who are you?" "Atheist, sir," came the answer. The sergeant major scowled. He said, "Atheist? Atheist? The communists are atheists. The ANC are atheists. SWAPO are atheists. This is a Christian army. Send them to the Pentecostals." And instead of a 40-minute Anglican service or 1-hour Baptist service, they were going to get a 3-hour Pentecostal service every Sunday. And that's what they were locked into. We were taught in the army about teamwork. Poles, drums, 8.4-kilometer runs, things like that. Landmines was the tool of choice of our enemies. We have always been renowned as marksmen. You had to be able to run with another man with kit, your kit and his kit and rifle, run. And that was buddy PT, as they would call it. The South African Army had some pretty tough training, pretty intense, and up at the border, everything was so flat, you had to have these water towers as the observation post. All sorts of interesting training mechanisms. This is the kind of webbing we started with. Not much different from Second World War type of webbing. Got better later. Our state presence guard, the Air Force, the Mirages, the Impalas. These are basic ground attack Impala aircraft. C-160s, the Puma helicopters, Impalas, ground attack, the Vampire bomber, the Rattle, South African designed turboprop engine, phenomenal, very, very, very powerful and effective. It was these armored cars that basically destroyed the Cuban mechanized divisions and their tanks in Angola. South Africa was described as Africa's superpower, and we were for a time. Back in 1960, Harold Macmillan came to South Africa and he gave his Winds of Change speech, and Britain was abandoning the empire all over, and they were handing over all sorts of places throughout Africa to local leaders. One British Foreign Office person said, "It's like giving a teenager a bottle of whiskey, the keys to the car, and a shotgun." In fact, it turned out to be a lot more dangerous than that. But all over Africa, chaos ensued. And this wasn't just the British idea. This was American foreign policy. From FDR, Truman, Eisenhower, America's number one foreign policy was always get Europe out of Africa. Dismantle the European colonies. And of course, what happened? Into the vacuum came Russia, China, and the United States' interests. And Africa's turned into a complete battleground, killing fields. Tens of millions died. This is where Harold Macmillan gave his Winds of Change speech in our parliament in South Africa. Interesting, it's a picture of the Union of South Africa being composed in the picture above. Now there's the dining room. Well, there was a campaign against Hendrik Voigt. Hendrik Voigt was turning South Africa into an independent country, and he got South Africa to a point where we owed nobody anything. We paid off all our national debt, and our country owed nobody a thing, and we were having 8% growth rate per annum. Now, Trump's trumpeting that you've reached 4% growth rate per annum. Hendrik Voigt was keeping us consistently at 8%. We even touched 16% growth rate on occasion. And so, for Voigt must go, interesting, Financial Mail, how do you like this? They were also calling for Voigt must go. And he was shot in the face. It should have been a deadly blow. Interestingly enough, the man who shot Hendrik Verwoerd was a patient of a psychiatrist who was a Jewish member of the South African Communist Party. This at the time of MK Ultra, using drugs and psychiatry to prepare people to be assassins. He survived. He survived this. And then he gets attacked again. I mean, this is just part of where we live. This is our natural fynbos, as we call it, Proteas. And the Dutch came and they turned South Africa from wilderness and thorn bushes into magnificent farms. The oldest building in the Southern Hemisphere, the Castle of Good Hope, our parliament. Hendrik Verwoerd being brought out of parliament after being stabbed to death. Now, would you believe he was stabbed to death by a member of the Communist Party who was banned from our country, who was working in parliament. He'd been kicked out of the country. Someone got a secure job as a messenger in the parliament, stabbed him to death. He walked up to the prime minister where he's sitting in his seat in parliament and stabbed him very professionally so that within seconds, before anyone could reach him, Verwoerd was irretrievably killed. That man, Stefundis, the second assassin of Verwoerd, was also a psychiatry patient of the same Jewish Communist Party member. And on neither occasion did it come to trial. Both were deemed insane. There was no trial, no evidence heard, no testimonies given, and the people just sort of disappeared into some kind of psychiatric ward, maybe. And the Prime Minister of South Africa, who had gotten us debt-free and at that moment was working on closing down the South African Reserve Bank, gets stabbed to death in Parliament. What do you think? Well, here you can see our Navy, Army, state funeral for Hendrik Verwoerd. President P.W. Botha is the Minister of Defense when I was in the Army. He became our president later. And we good friends with his daughter, his granddaughter, does our course. I'm helping his son-in-law, who was his bodyguard, write his memoirs. He was definitely assassinated too, but that's another story. P.W. Botha strove to win the Cold War and did his part in helping us to defeat the Soviets in the war in Angola. Now, apartheid is apartness, separateness. Good fences make good neighbors. The whole idea was that you don't celebrate diversity by mixing it all together, because if you mix all the colors together, what do you get? Brown. So if you want to have red and green and blue and all the different colors of art, I see my daughter mixing art and doing with it. You don't have diversity if you mix it all together. Now, in South Africa, we have 11 different tribes, 11 different national languages, and therefore we're 11 nations. We're not one nation. We're an empire. Again, residue of the British Empire. Today, we are seeing evidence as to why Hendrik Verwoerd's policy of separateness, where people are saying what's going on today in South Africa is apartheid reversed. No. If it was apartheid reversed, we would be given our own areas to rule, to elect our own town councillors, our own mayors, our own members of parliament, our own governments. They would be coming in and building us schools, universities, hospitals, stadiums. Not that we want them to, we can build our own. But that's what apartheid was. Apartheid was the white people paid to give the black people their own areas, their own suburbs, their own shopping centers, their own everything. You could not believe this magnificent stadiums and everything built for them. But today, you've got people at University of Cape Town sitting in there with Kill All Whites t-shirts. By the way, that's not hate speech. University of Cape Town have these people walking around there. My daughter, of course, I'd never send my children to study at the university, but my daughter belongs to a ballroom dancing group that happens to meet at the university campus. She saw the day this started, taking down irreplaceable original oil on canvas art and burning it and destroying it. Now, this used to be the University of Cape Town, which Cecil John Rhodes set up. They come and they just burn, destroy, loot, pillage, and this is why we wanted separate schools, separate hospitals, separate universities, because the destruction, just in 2015, 300 million rands worth of damage was done on university campuses alone by these student riots. And Then they complain that the trains aren't running on time, so the best way to make the trains run on time is to burn the trains. That helps. They've burned down whole university campuses. This is magnificent universities. We've got some universities all over, Potchefstroom, Natal, Stellenbosch, having attacks. The ANC say, vote us for free education, free quality education, well, that's, and a better life for all. I think you've got to take the F away. It's the better life for all. This is impossible. There's no such thing as free education. There's no such thing as free anything. Somebody's got to pay for it. So here you see what students walking around the university campus trying to pick up the trash that's been put there by other students. This is what our streets can look like. This is, I remember I showed you what Johannesburg used to look like. The British called it the streets are paved with gold. Well, now it's paved with nonsense, just litter. Another man very hated, Andreas Trinick, founder of the Conservative Party. Here's a man who worked with Hendrik Voet, and he stood for Hendrik Voet's policies, demonized in that country as well. I met him, knew him, godly man, honorable man, called the worst racist and so on. I went into his office, a Zulu shield presented to him by King Goodwill's Valentini, awards from the Freedom Fighters of the UNITA Freedom Fighters in Angola, of Jonas Zwimbi, and all around his offices, things from black people, because again, the black people said, Hendrik Voet did the most for us. The next man who did the most for us would have been Andreas Trinick. These are men hated by the left because actually they really helped the black people. Yeah. We've got a place in South Africa called Aranya. This is a farm which has been turned to a white community where they will not have anyone except Afrikaans-speaking whites who are Christians. And this is a place where there's no burglar bars, no security gates, no razor wire. It's a place where just Afrikaans Christians live. And Aranya, their schools are like our old schools used to be. They remember Hendrik Voet. Outside, you've got the savages and barbarians screaming, kill the Boer, kill the farmer. Now, in 1994, we had 70,000 white commercial farmers in South Africa, 70,000 farmers who fed 100 million people. But our population was only 28 million. So back in 1994, 24 years ago, we were feeding 100 million people, but our population was only 28 million. So we're feeding all the people up to the Congo from 70,000 white farms. Today, we've got less than 26,000 white commercial farmers left. Less than 26,000. They're feeding 40 million, but our population has more than doubled to 29 million up to 59 million. Now we have 59 million people, but our farmers can only feed 40 million, which is also a phenomenal achievement. But we're having to import food for millions of people now for the first time in the country's history. Now they want to take those 26,000 farms owned to whites and take them over in the name of the state. They don't want to give them to black people. They want the government to own it, and they'll lease them. So this isn't about free enterprise interfering and saying, racially, no white can own a farm, we give them to blacks. The government will own all the farms. And China wants a lot of those farms to strip mine because they're convinced there's more minerals under those farms. They don't care about the food and production. Now, 4,000 white farmers have been murdered since 1994, 4,000. We had 70,000. The statistic is that if you, now, I don't want to show horrible pictures of the murders, so I'll just show some of the pictures of the people who have been murdered. These are just some, because you've got to give some face to the victims. Actual case studies. A man was tied up with wire and they cut off his eyelids so that he could not close his eyes while they crucified his three-year-old daughter on the kitchen table, gang raped her, poured gasoline over and set her alight in front of the father before they killed him. They killed these people with blow torches. They use the most vile, sadistic methods. We're not talking about murder. We're talking about torturing people to death. Farm murders doesn't even come close to describing it. Gouging out people's eyes with forks. Things like that. These are people in South Africa amongst the 4,000 white commercial farmers and their family members murdered. But that's only part of the story. We've had 85,000 white people murdered since 1994. So, in the whole war that we fought for 26 years, the so-called apartheid war, 18,700 people were killed in 44 years of apartheid. But the vast majority of those were killed by the ANC. Black on black violence. At the TRC, that's the show trials, kangaroo courts under Desmond Tutu that Mandela inaugurated, they managed to scrape up 500 people, black people, not only black people, some were white communists, but 500 people that they say were killed by the apartheid government, by police, security police, army, and so on. So in 44 years, they were able to identify 500 people who were killed by the apartheid state. And they admitted that their people had killed over 18,000 by necklace murders. 1,000 people were burned alive with necklace murders, which Winnie Mandela, Nelson Mandela's wife, promoted and so on. Burning people alive with an automobile tire on them to have the rubber melt into their skin while diesel fuel, which burns slower. And it could take a long time for a person to die that way. Sadistic, like the Inquisition burning people at the stake in the Middle Ages for translating the Bible. So we've had, in South Africa, a phenomenal amount of cruelty and mass murder. By the way, since Mandela became president, average death rate per year, murders, 25,000. So, in 42 years of war, 18,700 were killed, most of which were killed by the ANC terrorists. Now that we've got peace, no war, 25,000 killed a year. We're talking about something like 750,000 people have been killed, 750,000 people killed since freedom and peace came to our country. It is genocide. There is no question. There is, in fact, Professor Stoughton of Mary Washington University, who's vice president of the International Genocide Watch, he says all 9 stages of genocide are at work in South Africa right now, including denial. And so we've got to have demonstrations. Stop killing farmers. Do they not realize you kill the farmers, you're going to starve? And yes, the difference between the old evil apartheid army and the present bunch of slobs. What South Africa used to look like in the 1970s, what our beaches look like now. As you can see, tourists are going to want to pay big bucks to go to that kind of beach. And you've got savage violence in the streets. But all of this is the white people's fault, somehow. They've even brought out a book, Is South Africa Too Dumb for Democracy? Well, we weren't too dumb for democracy when we had apartheid. But now that they've got one man, one vote, it is too dumb for democracy. They've 5 times elected a bunch of incompetent criminal communist thieves who have looted the country no end. South Africa is the only country in the world where 90% of the taxpayers did not vote for the ruling party. The white people pay the taxes and the black people live under socialist welfare benefits. And the trouble is, you may think, well, we've got that in America. Yes, but the whites in South Africa are 9% of the population. 9% of the population are paying for all 59 million. We've got over 20 million on welfare in our country. Some people have said apartheid is a lie. In fact, it is. The way how many people describe it, apartheid, you know, and they turn to hatred instead of it. Apartheid in Afrikaans meant separateness. In fact, Hendrik Witt described it as good neighborliness. He said, good fences make good neighbors. When you own your property, you will look after it better. And when you know the boundaries, you can be more friendly with your neighbor because you don't need to fear your neighbor because your neighbor's got his and you've got yours and you work together better. And so separateness meant that there was very good race relations. When I was growing up, my interactions with Matabele and Zulu was excellent. We got on well together. I knew their stories. I knew their history. I knew their heroes. I knew about the Shakas and the Lubengulas and the Mzilikazis. And I knew all of the Zulu and Matabele stories. We got on just fine together. In the army, we fought well together. 3-2 battalion made up of Portuguese-speaking black ex-communist Angolans working next to us. We're in the field fighting together. 1-2-1 battalion, the Zulu battalion. We worked well together, but they had their units. They had their traditions. We had ours. We worked together against a common red enemy. Interestingly, Desmond Tutu liberation theologian par excellence, even he says the ANC government today is worse than apartheid. Oh, you think? And it's obvious to us, but interesting, he says so. Even Julius Malema says it was better under apartheid than it is under ANC now. Well, that's obvious. The Zulu King says apartheid was better than what we've got now. Does any of this get reported in your Clinton News Network, the Bolshevik Broadcasting Corporation, Sly Magazine, Useless News and World Report, or any of the other lamestream media? I personally miss being tired, cold, hungry, wet, getting shouted at and being underpaid. But I miss the brotherhood we had in the South African Army when we were fighting communism. This is a great flag. This is a flag of honor. Cape Town, Tavern of the Seas, very cosmopolitan, but the city where Jan van Riebeeck first prayed that this outpost would be for the spreading of the light of the Reformed faith throughout the continent of Africa. Interestingly, in 1900, our newspaper printed this vision of what South Africa would be in the year 2000. So they're looking 100 years ahead. Okay, fashions have somewhat changed, but I don't think they could have envisaged how the communists would destroy the vision of a good future. Cape Town. This is a Voortrekker reenactment. You can see our Transvaal flags, the Vier Kleur, or the four colors, we call it. Some of our indigenous areas. I've been trying to salvage a lot of our history for our homeschoolers. We have history, especially South African history, workshops regularly at our mission, and I've put many of our best character stories on sketches from South African history, because history is a battlefield. And Karl Marx said the rewriting of history is the first battlefield. So this is just a bit of an intro. I've got more important things to give to bring us right up to date in the second hour, but these are just some good resources that I've brought that you might be interested to learn more about South Africa. Few people know that one of the greatest pietistic devotional writers was a South African, Andrew Murray, born in Kraaifontein, been in the home, been where he ministered in Worcester and Wellington, the Africa Institute. He started the first great missionary sending agency from South Africa. Andrew Murray wrote 200 books, which have never been out of print, which are in more languages than any other South African writer. He's the greatest South African writer in all time. I don't think many people around the world who love Andrew Murray's writings understand that he's actually South African. When David Livingstone landed and came to Africa, he stayed in the Murray home in Kraaifontein. He said, the prettiest town in Africa he's ever seen. I don't think you could say that now if you went back there, sadly now, because of what the communists have done to the place. But there's so much to learn from our history and heritage, and all this has been damned to hell by the present government. A lot of people, they can't even see an elephant standing right behind them. They just don't know. You have these people who could, like these folks on a tour in one of our game reserves, and you can imagine the game reserves saying, if you look far over there under the tree, you can see this lion in. They're staring, and they can't see the lion standing right next to them, saying, that's just my brother. First battlefield, rewriting history. So, any questions, any comments? Yes.
Yes, when it was all paid, what was the money system at that time?
Our money system?
Yes.
In South Africa. We have a South African Reserve Bank, which is not South African. It has no reserves and it's not a bank, just like the Federal Reserve Bank's not federal. It's got no reserves and it's no bank. It's a Rothschild entity. Jan Smuts, Christian Smuts, the general who set up the League of Nations, the United Nations, who is a real one-worlder. He was recruited to British intelligence back in the 1890s when he was studying in Cambridge. Jan Smuts is the one who started our reserve banks for the short time that he was president, prime minister. When our first prime minister, Louis Botha, died, his deputy, Jan Smuts, got in. So Jan Smuts was never elected. He just got in. He and Churchill were like two peas in a pod. So our system, sadly, rips us off. In South Africa, do you know what's the greatest crime you can commit in South Africa? Illegal diamond buying in the past and today. If you find a diamond on your farm, or if you're scuba diving in the Orange River, you find a diamond, that diamond belongs to De Beers, to Anglo-American. And if you try to sell it to anyone except give it to De Beers, you will get a worse sentence than for serial murder, t- tax evasion. I mean, it's even worse than tax evasion. Can you imagine? And so in South Africa, under the ANC and in the old South Africa, illegal diamond buying is the greatest crime. And it's true in Namibia too. So Namibia, or Southwest Africa and South Africa, is owned by De Beers. It's owned by Anglo American. Because every single diamond in our country belongs to De Beers, even if you found it in your farm. And so our money system in our country, well, it used to be worth something, but now it's totally controlled by the big bankers. I mean, the Rothschilds and the Oppenheimers, they tell the government what to do.
Okay, understood. But the time when there was no debt, with, I think...
Oh, yes. Hendrik Voet. So Hendrik Voet, he was working towards South Africa being truly independent. Now, of course, they were not happy that he pulled us out of the British Commonwealth. They were very unhappy that he got us out of debt, because that's how you control people, get them into debt. Credit card, max out, you know, let the banks own everything. And so, yes, he was working to South Africa becoming totally independent, and his next step after political independence was economic independence, and that's when they shot and then stabbed him.
Funny how that works.
Sorry?
Funny how that works.
Total coincidence. I'm sure that, I mean, obviously there's no conspiracy.
When you look for independence, you're killed.
Yeah, just some psychotic person working alone, no conspiracy, and it never came to court.
So, kind of an unrelated question. In the late 60s, American satellite imagery picked up a series of bright flashes about 400 miles southwest of Cape Town.
Yes.
And six leading Israeli scientists were missing.
Yes.
12 leading South African scientists.
Yes.
24 hours later, there was evidence of a plutonium detonation.
Yes.
South Africa never has admitted that they had.
Well, I know the people concerned. These are 8 of our first atomic bombs.
Okay.
This is one of our missiles that was developed. This was in Pelindaba. I mean, I've been there. This was where we operated our nuclear weapon deterrent option. We had a full-on nuclear deterrent option. We were practicing. We had them all. And yes, this is one of South Africa's prototypes that was used. And we had the ability to take out at least 8 capitals if we had to. Now, they destroyed it all before handing off the ANC. And they destroyed the plans and they destroyed everything and so on. Now, the South African Defense Force before reached in the 70s a full nuclear deterrence capability. Yes, I mean, I know the people involved and I know the people responsible for taking it down and for dismantling it. That's all true. And I think it's probably still called a state secret, but I think it's pretty out by now.
The interesting thing was that this happened after they murdered the president to try to get him away from...
But he set this in he got it rolling. And the Southern Defense Force was operating this so secretly that most people didn't even know that it was there. Most of the people in our country had no idea. I only discovered this later on just because I was in with those sort of people who were involved in it. But most South Africans today are still not really aware of our nuclear capability. Yes.
Are you in any way connected with the Sidelanders?
No, but I'm a guest speaker sometimes, and I'm networked. I know them. They're good people.
Yeah, I've listened to some of their leaders speak on stream.
Yes.
And they seem to have a pretty good handle on, shall we say, an escape plan if needed.
Yes. Well, I've got serious differences with some of the top leaders of Suidlanders. Suidlanders is a huge civil preparedness group, and they certainly are a great bunch of people, great preppers. But like any important group, they're infiltrated by the government, as you'd expect. I believe that you can have in Idaho some kind of white separatist groups, which is entirely made up of government agents, and there's not one legitimate member. As they found out where Terry, where you had the Oklahoma bombing things, and there's no doubt it was all set up by every kind of alphabet soup agency. So, for example, we're deeply concerned that the Simon Roach, who's an ex-ANC person, who's the most prominent spokesman for the Suidlanders, is an agent provocateur and he works for the other side. We don't
see him on YouTube all the time.
We do not trust him at all because, first of all, he's ex-ANC. He joined the ANC and he left for no clear reason. But what we don't like about him is he is a panic monger. He continually, their main way of dealing with things is the moment the night the long knives and the massacres begin, you pack up everything, you flee your farm, you gather in the central place. Now, wait a minute. That's exactly what the communists want. They want you to not defend your farm. They want your farms and they want to loot your farms. His goal is flee, retreat, and then gather in central places. In the Rwandan genocide, which I investigate, and I walk knee deep in corpses in hospitals, schools, and churches, and most of the people were killed in hospitals, schools, and churches. They fled their homes. They came to central places, which is exactly what the Interahamwe mass murderers wanted. They had them centralized. They surrounded them and they murdered them. Now, Soetlander's plan is to basically flee your farms the moment there's problems. That's so much easier for the communists than coming to people and fighting them on their territory where they can defend their farms, where they've got the home advantage. So, I do not trust Simon Roach as far as I could throw him. I don't even trust him that far. And I think he's a plant by the government. Now, having said that, they're very, very good people in Soetlanders. But I just wouldn't trust this character. And he's gone on the tours in America, and he's been gathering lots of money. This is exactly what the communists did after the communist revolution, the Bolshevik revolution, Russia in 1917. They set up monarchist and anti-communist groups all over Europe, run by the Cheka, which later became the GRU, which later became the NKVD, which later became the KGB. And what they did was so that they could know what the opposition is doing and they could neutralize them and they could also channel the funds that people would give to genuine groups but make sure it stays and doesn't do much harm. So to me, Simon Roach is doing exactly what communists have always done. He's there in order to, he'll say a lot of good things, but basically he's there to have people trust him as the voice of the Soetlanders. And there's a lot of Soetlanders I know who are convinced he's a government plant. Any other comments or questions?
I have a question. So, just to understand, if you think that the apartheid time, it was a better time for South Africa?
Immensely better. It wasn't even evil. Now, having said that, in any system, you get petty, small-minded bureaucrats who revel in abusing their power. But in general, although apartheid would have had anecdotal examples of some foolish, stupid, and callous or mean-spiritedness, that would have been dealt with. From the top down, you often had very well-meaning people who wanted the very best for the Zulu, the Tswana, the Bushmen, for everyone. And they were not selfish people. They were people who had a good mind. And I think it is terrible to describe now apartheid as something evil. Apartheid was not meant to be evil. It may have been applied badly on occasion by some individuals, but the concept was give everyone a vote. All 11 nations in South Africa to have full control over their own areas, their own things. And in fact, not only did it work better.
But besides blacks.
Yes.
Besides blacks, they didn't have the right to vote.
Of course they did. Every single tribe had to vote. That's, we were giving independence to the Khoza to have control over Transkei, the Vendans of Venda, the Siskinds, the Maputaswans, every single tribe and language got the vote. How could it not have been so? The ANC were murdering black town councillors, black mayors, black members of parliament. They were attacking the parliaments of the black people, like in Siskinds. Obviously, every black person had the votes in South Africa, but we didn't have it on a common voters' roll. The coloureds had their voters' role, the Indians had their voters' role. Everyone had their own representations and areas and even their own beaches and recreational areas. And the whole idea was to keep the people from conflict. And you can see that multiculturalism is the recipe for violence and for nonstop chaos. In your country, do you get violence in Iceland, for example? The more diversity, the more violence, and the more crime, and the more murders, and so on. And so it has always been, let me finish this. It has always been a number one priority of the Communist Party USA to promote miscegenation, mass invasion, of immigration and to bring in many, many more black people and other nations and races into your country to create conflict, which communists need. So when the Communist Party of South Africa and the Communist Party of the United States has the same agenda, they want multiculturalism. Multiculturalism is the environment that brings about discontent and violence and hatred. Whereas the apartness that Verwoerd was dealing with in South Africa was bringing peace and stability where everybody controlled their own destinies. So what the people are fighting for in Croatia, Slovenia, Bosnia, Latvia, Lithuania, Estonia, South Africa was giving the people free. And we were paying for it. We weren't just giving them the territory. We were building them phenomenal facilities.
Okay, I wouldn't agree with you because...
Have you lived in South Africa?
Do you know how many people... Yes, we did. And do you know how many people were killed by Russians that are mostly white? How many Polish people they killed? How many Russians they killed? And there was no racial problem. So
yes, there was.
No, there wasn't. Absolutely only white.
No.
You were not no. people there.
I know that, but Europe's got different nations.
Europe was absolutely, especially Central Europe and Eastern Europe, was only white. You never saw.
But there were different nations.
Diversity of racial. But you say that the problem is the problem starts when you have different races.
I didn't say that.
Sorry, you just said this.
No. Look, Yugoslavia. You had six nations. You had three religions. You had two alphabets. There were several calendars, but you had only one political party. Now, Yugoslavia stayed together, even though it was an impossible empire, only as long as Tito was around, and then it broke back into its correct national pieces through violence and war. Because a Muslim Bosnian and an Orthodox Serbian, they might not be a different race, but they're different religions, they're different cultures, they're different languages.
I was in Yugoslavia, and
yes.
Yugoslavia was the biggest army for all Europe, for Middle East, and the biggest manufacturer of weapons. And Western powers absolutely didn't like it. And this was the reason why it was attacked and divided.
The West created Yugoslavia as a punishment on Austria. There never was a Yugoslavia before the First World War, and there isn't one now, because it was a creation of the Versailles Treaty, and so they hacked off as much of Austria as they could. And instead of giving the Croatians independence and the Slovenians independence, they wanted a large nation, even though it was not a nation, it was a multiplicity of nations, to counter Austria, which had been cut down because of the First World War Versailles Treaty. So therefore, by putting people who hated one another, let's face it, the Bosnians and the Serbs have always hated one another. Why? Because the Bosnians are Serbs who converted to Islam when they were under the Turkish Empire. And this is why, obviously, different races, different religions, different languages will clash unless you give them their freedom and independence. Why make Finland part of Russia? Why make Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia one country or make them part of Russia? People are happier when they have their own freedom and independence.
I don't agree, because Polish people and all Central Europe, they like Russia. And what is presented in me...
Well, I like a lot of things in Russia too, but it doesn't mean I want to be under them.
The problem is always military problem, not people problem, because people, they live there. They like each other. They don't have problem with each other.
I'm afraid that's not true.
Not Yugoslavia, in Croatia. We've been living in Croatia for some time. And we talk to these people. They don't have problem with each other.
Not at the moment, but historically.
Powers and this divide, they were the biggest supplier for all Middle East.
Nevertheless, I think you're simplifying things. Bear in mind, there's been wars throughout the centuries through the different national groupings. And when you force people and where they are a minority in their own country, there will be discontent. And so the idea of giving every national and ethnic group independence and control, political control of the areas and cultural control, then they can be good neighbors with others. And right now in Europe, you're seeing some of that, but that's maybe because they've now got more control over the areas. When you had only one political party for the six nations of Yugoslavia, obviously, what you had was oppression. I don't think the people in Yugoslavia liked it back then. The Croatians, I know, are very happy they're independent now.
No, they didn't want to live under a military system.
Good. Well, that's what before.
They're oppressed by the European Union, so how they have...
I quite agree, fully. The European Union is like the new Warsaw Pact. And we have a much better solution. We don't support centralization, totalitarian systems. We support devolution. The Bible is all for decentralization. But I think my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Peter. Let's, amen. Don't get away. Don't get away.